Welcome to the Bregman Leadership Podcast. I'm Peter Bregman, CEO of Bregman Partners. We help companies achieve ambitious goals by strengthening leadership throughout the organization. I created this podcast to share ideas that you can use to become a more powerful and courageous leader. Hi, welcome everybody. I am here talking about a book with some pretty awesome authors. The book is called Friend and Foe, When to Cooperate, When to Compete, and How to Succeed at Both. I'm lucky enough to have with me Adam Galinsky and Maurice Schweitzer. They co-wrote the book. We'll talk a little later about the competitive or collaborative dynamics of two authors writing a book. For now, I want to jump in and talk about the book. First of all, Adam and Maurice, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much.
So I loved this book. I loved it because, first of all, while it included lots of social research that sometimes you see in other books, you had a lot of unique anecdotes. You really brought in not only the social research that people do, but your own social research, as well as sort of commonplace popular culture examples and really practical examples of, you know, how to use the information to manage yourself in negotiations better, manage yourself in relationships better, manage yourself in organizations better. So I thought it was a very applicable book and a really useful book. So first of all, thank you for writing it.
You're welcome.
You talk as a main idea about this idea that we are social animals vying for scarce resource in an unstable and dynamic world. That seems to be the big idea of the book. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. The premise of the idea is that we're both friends and foes. That is, we're cooperating and competing with the same people in organizations, at home, and out when we go to dinner with our friends. That is, nobody's a pure foe and nobody's a pure friend. We're really both. And I want to reconceptualize the way we think about our relationships to think about having this duality of friends and foes. And it's our environment. That is, it's unstable. We're competing for scarce resources. Sometimes we compete more effectively as a group. And sometimes within a group, we compete for resources. And we're very, very social. That is, we can't stand to be apart. Solitary confinement is incredibly painful. It begins to break down the mind. We need to be with other people. We need to navigate the social world. And our idea, our central thesis, is that we navigate best by holding in balance this idea of being a friend and a foe, cooperating and competing.
And I think one good example of this idea of cooperation and competition is just like to think about new parents, right? As a new parent, we work together to cooperate and to raise this child. And yet at 3 o'clock in the morning, when we're trying to sleep and the baby's screaming, we're competing over who has to get up and care for this child. So even in what we think of as the most cooperative, collaborative, and intimate relationship, there's still this tension between cooperation, competition. Two people getting married, for example. I got married just over a month ago. You know, they're forming a more perfect union with each other, but there's competition about exactly different aspects of the wedding and what elements are going to be in it. And so there's tension is always in existence, and that's where we have to find the right balance.
So first of all, Adam, congratulations.
Thank you.
How does understanding that dynamic help us? So once we understand, you know what, I'm in a relationship even with people that I really adore, or I'm really connected to, or really want to collaborate, and there's an element of competition. How does that on the ground help us?
Well, I think that one thing that it really does is it gives us, you know, knowledge is power, right? And so once we recognize that we need to find this balance between these forces and these forces are always in a tension, we can make adjustments. So let's take, for example, the idea of getting married, right? And the wedding is all of a sudden I might have noticed, and this I think actually occurred in my case, is that there's just a tension between the two of us. It's almost like competitive feelings. Like what you want is antithetical to what I want, or one person is conceding too much, and now they're starting to feel some resentment because they're like, I've been cooperating, and you keep competing. And so once we become aware of that, we can ask ourselves very simple questions like, am I in balance? Am I cooperating too much, or am I competing too much? And are there ways that we can cooperate and satisfy our needs without turning it into a competitive battle? And so it's just really this sort of this knowledge just allows us to have an awareness, to not be driven unconsciously and blindly by these competitive feelings or this resentment that we have, but to be able to interact in a way that produces the best solutions.
Which is interesting. I mean, it's almost like you have these two tools. You could either choose to be a friend or a foe in any particular situation, and you're assessing the situation and the relationship to figure out which tool in the kit should you use in this particular moment. Am I understanding that right?
Well, I even say, so that's right, that as we go back and forth with cooperation and competition, but also the sort of at a higher level, we've got to figure out which one should we be using and to recognize that we bring our full toolkit into every relationship. It's not as if we're going out with our friends and saying, hey, I'm leaving my competitive tools behind, or as Adam was describing, hey, I'm getting married, and this is all about collaboration, but rather to recognize that there's a balance here, and we don't want to get, you know, have things go too far out of balance, and we need to bring both sets of tools to all of our relationships.
And it seems like you're saying in the book that, or at least it seems to me that you have a preference from your research that you sort of want to start from collaboration, and then if that's not working, default back to competition in order to protect your boundaries.
There's a very famous study or a very famous context called the Prisoner's Dilemma. And in the Prisoner's Dilemma, we have two choices, cooperate or compete. And it turns out there's a little bit of incentive towards the competition side. So if we both cooperate, we get a pretty good outcome. But if I compete and you cooperate, I get an amazing outcome. And so there's this little bit of sort of incentive to compete. And they did this incredible contest where they got all the best minds in the world to say, come up with the best strategy to win this game, an iterative prisoner's dilemma where you keep doing this over and over again with the same partner. And the one strategy that won was called tit for tat. And what this is really simple. You start out cooperating. You cooperate until the other side competes. As soon as they compete, you compete, and you compete and compete and compete until they're willing to cooperate again. And so basically that sort of gives you some semblance of like, we're better off in the world starting with cooperation. But if someone competes with us, we can't just keep conceding. We can't lead to appeasement as happened in World War II or in some other cases. We got to be willing to fight back. And once we fight back, we get into that competitive balance and then maybe find a way to go back towards the cooperative balance.
Adam, I love that. And I can see so many areas in my own life where that happened. I'm thinking about a very specific situation where it had to do with a neighbor, and I started out collaborative and they were sort of competitive, and I kept being collaborative and they kept being competitive until finally I made a very strategic decision to get angry and to assert my competitive drive in a more vigorous way than they were doing. Like, I decided not just to match them, but to overwhelm them. And they immediately switched to being collaborative at that point. And then I went back to being collaborative. And I realized I can't be out of sync with the person I'm relating to, because they'll walk all over me until I have to exert my power, and then they'll come back in sync.
That pattern is actually very common in a lot of negotiation settings where somebody might be sort of a bully, or they might use anger tactically. And then now when you've matched that, when you become more competitive, now you realign that relationship. But I think that example is actually not just unique to you, but I think it's a very common experience. And I think it's an important lesson for all of us.
Can you describe a time? Because again, I also noticed that there were all these really positive examples of collaborating. Are there sort of positive examples that you can think of competing where it's just smart to compete right off the bat? That it's not a default position when all else fails, but the most positive outcome or productive way to engage in a particular relationship is competitively.
I think that one of the tensions we talk about in the book is, you know, how do you get people to trust you, to buy into you? And, you know, we have two routes. One is we can be respected for our competence and our ability. And sometimes we can be, connected because people like us and feel warm to us, et cetera. And a lot of the research suggests that if you want to sort of establish your competence first and then make yourself seem human. So once you're respected, then you can sort of give some foibles in a sense. So you give the competitive sort of sense, like, you know, I'm competent. And there's the famous coffee spilling study where they showed that if you find out someone has all these great credentials and then they after you find that out, they sort of spill some coffee or they trip a little bit, then you really like them and respect them because you already know they're great because of their credentials, but now they seem a little human. But if they don't spill the coffee or they spill the coffee before the credentials, well, then you kind of downplay the credentials and you sort of think of them just as a fool. And so I think a lot of times we need to get people to respect us up front. And then we can go towards the liking stage.
You know, I've used a lot of your tricks. You have little tricks like that in the book. I've spilled coffee 3 times since I read Friend and Foe. And what I realize is in order to do that right and to get the impact you're talking about, you have to spill it on yourself and not on them.
Yes.
That when you spill it on them, then it kind of counteracts that effect. I also loved the focus you said, never smile after a negotiation, right? Never, you know, always go last in a competition when you know, you're visible to people. You're not necessarily just on a list. There's all these little tricks and tips that come out of the research that you're doing to help you both end up with a result that's more favorable and stay connected to the people around you.
Right, right. So, I mean, but what I like is you're highlighting a lot of ideas that really emphasize this balance. That is, we want to manage these relationships, but also make sure that we end up looking out for our own interests at the same time.
It's great. So let's talk about that in the context of an organization, because I speak with a lot of leaders in organizations, and there's often this desire to choose one or the other, to say basically, look, in my organization, I need people competing. I need them, you know, when they compete, they push each other. I want to create competitions so that everyone raises the level of their game. And then I see other people who talk about in other social research that says, you know, the biggest advantage we have as human beings and organizations is our ability to collaborate and to work together. You also talk about baseball versus basketball, that baseball is a very individual sport and basketball is a team sport. So my question to you is, organizationally, are organizations basketball or baseball? Are we better off trying to structure competitive environments or collaborative ones?
So I'll answer sort of the first question, and then I'll let sort of or Maurice answer the basketball baseball question. But you know, one of the things that the research shows is that how do we reward people to get the best outcomes? You know, to work the hardest and commit to the organization. And the research is very clear. If we only offer people individual rewards and no team or group rewards, we just get competitive behavior and backstabbing and people do whatever it takes to get ahead. If we only offer team rewards, you get a lot of social loafing where people are like, I don't have to work that hard because if other people work hard on the team and we're successful, then we're going to be better off. And so the research is very clear that if you want people to work together, you need to have some mix of individual rewards. So the hardest individual performers do move up, but you also need to have some team rewards so that people are incentivized to collaborate with each other. And so just like you have to find this balance between cooperation and competition, you have to find this balance between team and individual rewards. And I think then Maurice can tell you a little bit more about the basketball baseball idea.
So I just sort of pick up this idea of baseball, as you mentioned, Peter, is an incredibly individualistic sport. You do work as a team a little, but it pales in comparison to how coordinated you need to be for basketball. And when you think about, you know, are organizations more like baseball or more like basketball? Well, it depends on the organization. In many organizations, people work quite independently. So you can think about traders, or you might think about lawyers in a law firm sort of working very independently. We have some organizations where people work independently, but there's some collective that sort of brings them together. And they're really this sort of nominal team, sort of like baseball. There are other kinds of work that are really much more like basketball, where we really need to work in concert. And unless we have knowledge sharing, unless we really work in collaboration with each other, if we don't coordinate our activities, we really don't do nearly as well. And it's in those settings where we can have too much talent, building a lot of work that Adam has done, where you find that sometimes when you have too many talented people and you don't have a clear hierarchy, then you can have competition within the group and that group doesn't coordinate as well and it doesn't operate as efficiently.
Makes a lot of sense. So you're two authors writing a book about friend and foe, competitive, collaborative. How did the relationship work between you as you were writing the book?
We did a lot of arm wrestling.
Who won? Who won?
Maurice certainly won the arm wrestling. you know, I think that, you know, it's, you know, even today we're having a conversation with you, and we're both trying to find the right balance between expressing our thoughts and letting the other person express their thoughts. And it's a, just being aware, again, going back to the awareness, I think it's really important. You know, I, in this conversation, I'm like, okay, I just made a point. So the next question, I should make sure that Maurice gets to go first, or I'll say something, but then give Maurice an opportunity to speak. So trying to find that right balance where we both get to speak. I think it was very similar in the writing process. In this case, it was really easy because Maurice is a world's expert on trust and apologies and deceptions and comparisons and negotiations. And I'm a pretty good expert on things like power and gender and hierarchy and perspective taking. And so we naturally took the lead on about half the chapters. And of course, then we edited each other chapters a lot. And sometimes that was very painful, right? Because you're like, I love my words, but Maurice has changed them. Oh, wait, they're better, but it's still painful, you know? And you're trying to find that right balance of your words versus their words and trying to find the right voice. And I think we're able to find that balance, though it took some tough, strenuous times at various places.
Yeah, I would just add, I mean, I'd say Adam's exactly right. it was, I mean, there were definitely painful moments, but I think for us, the idea that we're both collaborating and competing really helped us find our balance. And it is painful when somebody goes through your work and cuts all the stuff out or says, oh, that idea really isn't clear, I don't get it, we got to cut that example. But to realize that, you know, ultimately we're trying to coordinate to create this book. And I talk about this in the acknowledgments, you know, how we started off on this process. I initially was going to write a book, and Adam told me it was a terrible idea. and he was right. And he said, let's write a book together. It'll be better. And this book is absolutely way better than the book that I would have written on my own. I could never have done what we did on my own. And I'm delighted by the book that we've created. And it's only through the collaboration with Adam that it was possible.
And I think one other, you know, speaking of the acknowledgments, I wrote in my acknowledgments that Maurice was and is a better writer than I am, at least in this popular writing context. And what I find really funny is that then Maurice wrote his acknowledgments to me. They were better written than my acknowledgments to him, sort of therefore proving the point. But, you know, part of it was just, you know, getting to that point, wow, you know, Maurice is a better writer and he makes my writing better, but he's also made me a better writer. And I think, you know, Maurice sent me something yesterday and I felt like I was almost, when I sent it back to him, that I had kind of Schweitzered it up. Like I made it like a little bit what he used to do to me, you know? And so I think that, we're both better researchers and writers having gone through that process and being motivated by the strengths that each of us have.
Well, and I'm certainly better for having read the effort that you put into the book because I really enjoyed it. I also think as I'm listening to you and I think about this conversation that there's something I really found useful in Friend and Foe, which is just the frame, just the idea that that I will have emotions that sometimes feel inconsistent and yet that I can hold them both simultaneously and that I can even label them. So there's a point at which with my wife, I might feel, you know, competitive and I can kind of say, look, actually we're competing here. It's what you were saying before, Adam. And the frame that can help us feel better and understand the dualistic dynamic that goes on inside of us and not feel badly about it. And go, like, even my best friends, I'm going to feel competitive at times. And that softens it and it allows us to work more collaboratively together, in effect.
Yeah, I think that's an extremely important point. I mean, that is, I think we often might feel guilty, like, oh, how could I feel competitive with my wife or competitive with my best friend? Or, hey, I'm comparing myself, you know, I compare myself to Adam and I feel terribly. But to recognize, hey, that's natural. Everybody's doing it. And once we acknowledge it, once we recognize it, yeah, we can let go of that guilt and say, okay, here's the constructive way to deal with it. And I think your point's exactly right.
That's great. Adam Galinsky and Maurice Schweitzer, thank you so much for being on the show. The book is Friend and Foe, When to Cooperate, When to Compete, and How to Succeed at Both. It was a delight to read. It's a book well worth getting and reading. Adam and Maurice, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
If If you enjoyed this episode of the Bregman Leadership Podcast, please subscribe and leave a review on iTunes. For more information about the Bregman Leadership Intensive, as well as access to my articles, videos, and podcasts, visit peterbregman.com. Thank you to Claire Marshall for producing this episode, and to Brian Wood, who created our music. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned for the next great conversation.